Radio, and here we go. It is a special We Talk Comics stripped back to the core team. only two of us could make it, so it's like Marvel team up. There we go.
Except Marvel team up was twice the number of heroes.
you get Spider-Man and you get someone else. The book was great. DC Comics Presents introduced me to so many superheroes in the DC universe.
Oh yeah. No, I'm just saying this isn't Marvel team up. This is more like Marvel 2-in-1.
Oh, that's it. Okay. We Talk Comics episode 110. We Talk 2-in-1. There we go. That's.
Yeah, we don't got the Hulk here. We got the Thing. Yeah.
The audience at home now learns how we come up with episode titles. It's like that, only we do it before we start the episode. Welcome to We Talk Comics. I am Keith. I'm hosting tonight, and I'm joined by Chris.
Chris, yes. We both occasionally read comics.
I was reading some earlier today, even.
Oh,
what are you reading? What are you liking?
Right now, we're just wrapping up right now as we're recording this. The big sale on Chew. I actually bought the Comicology versions rather than my paper copies. I now have them all in an easily readable paper digital format where I can actually find them. So I've been catching up on that. And if you check out our interview with Greg Rucka, we just got done with the new 52, or not the new 52. What a habit of saying the new 52. 52 sale.
The old 52.
The old 52. I've been trying to catch up on that, reminding myself what a beauty Booster Gold actually is.
Oh, that's a great run, and it really I actually call it renovating that character, because he had fallen so far. I mean, for there to be Booster Gold comics out there that I have not purchased or even had any desire to read shows how far that character had fallen from the JLI days. The Extreme Justice, he lost his armor, and then they cut off his arm, and then they gave him the big bulky armor. And I
don't remember the arm thing.
Yeah, it was sometime during Extreme Justice, because his classic suit was destroyed by Doomsday, and he was given an armor because he resigned when Juergens left.
I can't believe you actually read Extreme Justice.
I read about because it had Booster, so I read it for a while, and then I just couldn't do it anymore.
Really, I got the first issue. And it was just so I mean, it was a cool team.
It was a great team. Like, it was awful, awful art.
The lineup, but that first issue was enough for me. I was done right there.
It was actually, was it Dan Votto wrote that? It was terrible. And it was during that really dark time when all of the really hot creators at Marvel left to go to Image. All of the hot artists at DC either went to other companies or they went to Marvel to fill the gap from when, all the Image guys left. And you ended up with anyone that could basically do a stick figure was getting work at DC on their lower tier books. So there were some really just terrible, terrible artists working at that time.
But I mean, it was strange. They made a big deal out of number one.
Mm-hmm.
They did. There was a big launch. There was a lot of copies of number one. I didn't cancel the book. It was canceled for me.
Just your local comic shop owner said, don't do this to yourself.
Exactly. Nobody ordered any number twos.
They were all number two. It had, I mean, Whenever we're talking about something from the 90s, the first question always occurs to me is, what was the gimmick cover on number one? I'm trying to remember. Was it a pop-up, maybe?
No, it wasn't even a gimmick.
Did they not even have a gimmick cover for that one? That's terrible.
No, they didn't. They didn't. I think they might have had multiple covers. And there might have been some sort of tie-in where they gave money to charity.
we'll put this. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes with links to the eBay for Extreme Justice number one. speaking of Booster Gold, I mean the 52 sale. If you don't have 52, I have the four trade paperbacks. There's also an omnibus of it. It's a terrific read, and Booster Gold is back. That's the big news.
Where is he back?
Booster Gold will be appearing in Future's End, the weekly takes place 5 years in the future book that DC's putting out, and he will have his own title starting in September.
Oh, sweet!
So he will have one of the 3D lenticular covers in the September Future's End event.
Okay, speaking of covers, this should be in the news. The selfie covers. Am I the only one and said, has DC lost their freaking mind with these covers?
No, I think many people said that.
This is not a good idea.
See, now, and to me, this is one of those people picking on DC and not picking on just both big companies at the same time. Because I don't think that the selfie cover is any stupider than the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. covers, where they feature characters that do not appear in the comic at all. why does Agent Coulson on the Spider-Man? Is he in it? No. No, he's not. So why is he on the cover? I don't know. The Order 10, they gave you one of these. That's why he's on the cover. Watch Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Tuesdays at 9. Like, that's...
Rash consumerism.
At least it's not every character from Arrow is on a cover in August. I would totally get the Felicity
some
smoke.
Some of them, though. Actually, Arrow has a huge cast. At least they all get their own.
I would totally get the Felicity smoke cover. I don't care what it is. If it's on Birds of Prey, I would buy it. Felicity smoke. It's the best thing about that show. It's a great show, but she's the best thing about it anyway.
Actually, I was surprised what they canceled. I know this is the first time I think we've seen an actual cancellation where it's just the bottom books.
Yeah, and let's get into those. I forgive my couple of characters of typing because I do want to pull up the. It's not gonna.
We lost Batwing finally.
I mean, Batwing was not a big surprise.
No, but I mean, every time they've announced they're going to have cancellations, I've gone, finally, Batwing's gone, and he survived. I don't have hatred to the character. I just never saw any reason to have this book.
I got to give them credit for how long they gave Batwing a try, though. I have really, honestly been on a death watch for Batwing. Since about Christmas, I can't believe, and you know, the creators did say this, like Jimmy Palmiotti has been really clear because Palmiotti and Gray, two of the six books canceled are Palmiotti and Gray books. All-Star Western and Batwing. Really, really sorry. Sad to see All-Star Western gone. But
me too. That was one I thought they'd keep going because the trades. The back issues.
Well, one of the bad things about the way that DC does their trades. I mean, I know why they do their trades. The trades come out much later than the issues, much later than Marvel puts theirs out. But it's because DC wants to. They don't want to strip away the monthly buying because monthly buying is still what pays for the books. Trades is great, but unless you have a successful monthly book, the trade isn't going to sell anyway. You know, it's why Hawk and Dove wasn't collected. No one bought the book monthly, so no one wanted it in trade.
Well, I mean, those. I mean, I'm sure the Hawk and Dove will be collected. The 4 pages worth reading would be will be collected in some omnibus someday, soon.
But unfortunately, that I mean, the delay means that the trade sales don't really affect how long the book lasts. I mean, Vertigo's model is based on that. That's why a book like Hellblazer went for so long on such low sales, because the trade sales were part of the math. It really doesn't look in the mainstream DC that trade sales are part of the math anymore. And
the Trinity Sin books, that was a shocker to me. I thought we were keeping these two books alive so they could affect the rest of the DC universe. I thought this was just primer for a major mystical event of something happening in the DC universe.
I don't know. I wasn't that surprised. Pandora, I wasn't at all surprised to see go, because I think Pandora was really, that character was always created to as part of the Trinity event, the Trinity War that happened last summer, which led into Forever Evil. So what they were doing with those characters was really building toward like the events of Forever Evil. I don't know what you do with Pandora once Forever Evil's over. And I think maybe that's, I mean, as well as, there's a couple other things that are happening, but I mean, Phantom Stranger and Pandora, I gotta be honest, I dropped a couple of months ago because I really, really didn't like, the Blight storyline that was going on, and it took way too long. I was okay with the pace of Forever Evil, but Blight, which was 18 parts, really just burned me out.
I truly thought they were going to use these two characters a little bit to soften or blend Constantine Animal Man and Swamp Thing actually into the DC universe, because those books are still on the edge. They still feel to me more Vertigo than DC.
It's challenging, and clearly it's challenging for sales. You had mentioned that this is the first time that DC has ever look at, like, if you look at April sales of the books that hadn't already been canceled, because there's a couple like Stormwatch that had already been canceled, of the ones that hadn't already been announced as ending, they've just canceled the 6 lowest selling books. Without exception, they are the 6 lowest that weren't already going to get.
Because, I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were sort of looking at Stormwatch going, you know, I'm sure those two people are really enjoying it, and we're sure those two people work at DC.
Well,
but nobody was buying that one. That was like the last one, and they didn't cancel it for so long.
Well, and that's what I'll give them credit for, is that like they really kept a couple of these going just for diversity in the line. DC's cutoff is already lower than where Marvel counts those books by a couple of thousand copies. But like Batwing Batwing, I think, had even fallen under 10,000 copies. Like that's really the kind of numbers that like Superman Adventures and Teen Titans Go. Yeah, like they're the kind of numbers that kids books sell. And a reminder, the kids books sell terribly. Those are the books that they have clearly made a commitment to keep it going if it drops that low and it's still being published.
I wonder if the digital numbers on kids' books match the paper sales.
I've never heard of any, like, I mean, obviously the digital numbers are never public. Every person I've talked to at every company that has been willing to answer the question, and always they're answering it off the record because no one wants to talk about digital numbers, is 5 to 10% of what print is, and there's nothing that changes that. There is no book that does, like, you know, 10,000 copies print and 5,000 copies digital. It just doesn't happen. there just do not seem to be exceptions to that. I mean, and maybe there are at Image, but I still haven't heard of one. Even the books that Walking Dead, I don't know about, but a couple others that are top Image titles, I'm still hearing 5 to 10%.
No, I'm actually just curious because I've been enjoying All Hell Yeah, which is done by the same guys who do Teeny Titans and
by Art and Franco.
Art and Franco, yeah. I've been really digging their digging that book, and picking up the other. The other stuff that I've seen in the past, putting little on a title or teeny or whatever hasn't done anything for me, but I've been buying a ton, and there seems to be a huge push on these books digitally. They keep coming up in my suggestions for some reason. So, and we should actually talk about Comicology's move last month. We never really mentioned that.
Yeah.
How they made their app useless.
Useless to everyone who was dumb enough to buy an iPad. How about that? How about I'll go out on a limb and say, if you bought an iPad, and I still wouldn't say useless. I mean, this has been kind of a grumble for me, is that I honestly feel like a freaking hero. I feel like I have been climbing mountains without knowing it, because I always bought my comics through the website and then hit the download button on my app, because I knew where the money was going. I have an Android, so there actually isn't a change for me. But I always bought on the website because I didn't want that cut going to Google Play or to Apple. I wanted that money to go to Comixology and the comic creators. So I always, always bought on the website. Plus, I preferred the browsing, but that's neither here nor there. I preferred the
layout. Yeah, but have you noticed, because I used to split my shopping between the website and the app, because they had different sales.
Yes, because there's certain sales you can't do on the app. You can't do bundles in the in-app purchases. It was one of the weird things that wasn't allowed through Apple, is there were certain kinds of discounting you can do.
Yeah, and I mean the website also had occasionally had daily deals and like that, so I'd always check both places.
Yeah.
What I really don't love, though, is in the app I can only scroll back the last 50 purchases. Now, if you're a serious comic reader like me, I sometimes buy 200 freaking issues in a shopping trip. Then I have to remember what I bought.
Or
it gets lost in my collection on the download.
That purchase page was always set up that way. I mean, I get that now that, because if you bought them all, if you bought 200 on the website, you have to go looking for them. I get where you're going. They haven't actually changed that page, but because of the workflow,
no. I on the app I could just download now and
write them with you. Yeah, there should be like a download recent purchase, like a download all purchases from today or something like that. But,
yeah. And I also find, especially in the sale, since Amazon took over, especially in the sales section. Comicology. I don't know if you've had this trouble. When I press sales, I don't get everything on sale.
I've seen that a couple of times, and I don't know why that is, because I've come across a couple of times that there's something featured on the front page that's not on the sale page, and a couple of things like that. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why it is. There seem to be more sales of late too, which is good. I don't know why.
I mean, even the last couple weeks before the sale was announced, there were more sales.
Yeah, because they kind of come and go. I mean, Marvel and DC do one a week, but some of the other companies have been getting into them. I don't know. Like I said, because I have an Android tablet, there's much less change for me. They've actually, I mean, to be honest, they've made the app better. for Android, because I always bought on the website so that my money went to the creators. They've now changed the Android app so that it doesn't run through the Play Store, which means my money's still going to the creators. So it's actually improved that I don't have to go to the website, even though I still actually go and shop on the website. Because I find
it just simple. I always go to the Image website because most of the creators that I'm getting that I want to give money to are selling the books through the Image website.
Yeah, and are you buying the DRM free stuff off of the Image site?
I do. I don't like it because I can't actually keep it with the rest of my comic books. I have to all of a sudden manage my books.
Yeah, you have to. I'm with it, but I at the same time, like, I've still been buying my Image stuff through Comixology, even though I know less money is going to the creator, and there's a bit of hypocrisy there. But I really like having one app, and I honestly never buy anything at Dark Horse because I don't like their app, and I don't like that I'm exiting and going into a different app.
Oh, and I absolutely hate going to the Dark Horse app. I buy Dark Horse books occasionally, but they have sales from the website that aren't on the app, and it's not a great app. It's not the worst comic book app, but Iversity is the worst.
It's just clunky. Like, it doesn't have. I find frustrating about it is that I'm never, like, for the free comics is one of the things. Like, they've got a ton of free comics, but you click on them and I'm never entirely sure whether they've been put into my pile or whether I can read them only as long as they say that they're free. Like, it doesn't, like, it's kind of a clunky interface.
And I mean, it's on my list to go to the Dark Horse website someday and buy everything I want there because some of their bundles are fantastic.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They have all the Savage Swords of Conan in bundles of three, and you know how thick those trades mm-hmm. were. For $30, you can get five trades in a bundle. Just great deal. But then I think, that's a lot of reading.
Yeah, that's the other thing that you try to do that I'm trying more to do. I'm so far behind on my digital reading. And then we went to the comic show a couple of weeks ago, so I piled up trades there, and not as much as usual, but I did still get a fair amount. But I got the Comixology Submit Pack, a couple of months ago on the anniversary, and that was nearly 100 comics. It's about probably 85 that I didn't have already.
Yeah, and that was more than a couple months. We're coming up on a year now.
No, the Submit Pack was for the anniversary. It was in March of this year. It was for the anniversary of Submit.
I thought that was the August pack.
No, it was. No, it was just a couple months ago. Yeah,
you're right. Was, sorry. The 100th. I forgot I took two vacations this year.
the 100th.
All I knew is it came out on my vacation, and I had to run around Mexico trying to find a decent Wi-Fi connection to connect up with Comixology because I wanted that pack so bad.
There's some great stuff in that pack. I've found a couple of real gems in there. The Chair's Hiatus is the one I'm recommending. That's a chair as in a chair. The Chairs with an apostrophe Hiatus. It is my favorite that I've read so far in the Submit Pack. It is it feels like Strangers in Paradise. It's a really cool self-contained story. It's the only thing in Comixology from these creators. Awesome book.
There haven't been too many Submit books that I've bought that I haven't enjoyed, which makes me wonder if there is some sort of editorial process. I've actually never researched this. So.
Not editorial, but there is a quality control. There are some hoops to get Submit. There's simply so much stuff has been submitted to Comixology that it's Yeah, it's not editorial. All the stuff that's coming in is completed work. But that said, I know that there's, like, I know from talking to our pal Ryan and the guys at Comics Tribe, there is a bit of a pace of how much they want, because they don't want to add everything at once. They want to make sure that everything's kind of getting its spot, but they're still adding about 30 books a week, probably. And
no, there's, but I enjoy most of them. Out of that pack, for me, The Bunker was a winner. And of course, a book I discovered years and years ago, McTuck Wolf's Breath.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read it yet. And I saw it.
No. It starts with an M. It has a weird title. It works way down in way down in the list.
Well, and when I was making my recommendations list, I had to go back and find the original list of what was in it, because I knew that there was, you know, like The Chair's Hiatus is the best one of what I hadn't already read. Like, keeping in mind that Scam, Red 10, and Tiger Lawyer and Bunker were all, like, and I had read Bunker already, so like, Tiger Lawyer's in there. There was a lot of really, really excellent books in there. I just had them already, that's why.
Yeah, no, I have trouble remembering, because once again, I buy so much that, you know, anything with one issue, sometimes, sometimes I assume I got it on Free Comic Book Day, and if there's no, if I don't look too closely at it.
And, and if you haven't, do a search on Comixology, because almost all the Free Comic Day books are up now. They're much faster this year than last year.
Actually, you were tweeting about this today.
I think almost everything but the Marvel books are there now.
What did you search on the website? Because once again, I'm used to using the app.
Search FCBD.
Okay.
Yeah, the acronym for Comic Book Day. And
I
most
didn't realize
of them,
they were actually that was actually in the title of the Free Comic Book Day stuff.
Yeah, most of them will come up if you search that.
Because I saw your tweet on a couple new books this week, and I immediately went, oh, God, I wonder what else is there. And it wasn't in the recently added section.
Yeah, if you search FCBD, I know both Valiants went up today. FUBAR went up today. FUBAR is cool. I got one of the collections last year because a friend of the show, Chris Peterson, has a story in one of the volumes. So I bought it from him last year.
Such a talent, too.
Oh, yeah, he's so great. Yes, the two Valiants. DC stuff is already up. The Future's End and Teen Titans Go. I think, like, of all the big stuff, almost everything but the Marvel books of the, like, the big companies is up there. Booms may not be. The RKO one isn't yet, which is the one I really want, because I didn't realize the person before me grabbed the last one that Alpha Comics had on their stack. And it has
Jesus, how many times have I told you, in a comic book store, violence and profanity, as well as throwing children, is acceptable? No one else seems to adopt these rules other than me. But
I was in a hurry, and I got my Future's End. So, what else is happening? Speaking of Future's End, getting back to the DC canceled books. This cancellation actually kind of proves what our pal Matt and I have been looking at the numbers, that as DC adds these weekly books, they've really pulled back the number of monthlies to kind of even everything out to around 50 to 52-ish books, so that there's, like, they're not overwhelming the shelf. Because they canceled 6 in August, Booster Gold starts in September, and the new weekly World's End begins in October. So that's 5 slots with 6 books ending. So, and I wouldn't be surprised to see at least one of those 6 books relaunch as well. Either Birds of Prey, but Birds of Prey may relaunch as Canary. That's kind of what I'm guessing.
Are you at all surprised to see Grayson?
I think it's interesting what they're doing with Grayson. Nightwing was it wasn't as low. Like Nightwing kind of fell into the same spot that JLI did, where it wasn't that it was selling badly. It had a following. It was doing okay, but it was only doing okay. And it wasn't gaining any. It was kind of floating.
See, it's not even the loss of the title that bothers me. It's Nightwing is such, has been such a mainstay in Batman's revolving cast for years. You know, you got a problem. You have any sort of problem, like we need a guest star, we need this book to connect to this one, and we don't know how, because Batman has to be way bad, and these guys have to be way good. It's always Nightwing playing that middle ground. And now we have a completely different take on the character in the DC Universe. I mean, Grayson, he's using guns now, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. It took me completely off guard that... You know, I was expecting something a little different, but he doesn't really fit in the Batman universe. The title feels close, will cross over more readily with, I'd say, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, we've seen so little. We've only seen like two covers so far of what this book's going to be about. And I mean, certainly it's been jarring for people. Like the image, the cover of issue two, which is the introduction of Helena Bertinelli. Which is an intriguing. They're introducing Helena Bertinelli, who is not the Huntress. So that's an interesting direction.
Well, that's just great, because I've always felt the Huntress was a lazy, lazy, lazy character.
She's an odd character. Like she's one of it's interesting. Ellie, I like that she's paired with Power Girl because they're the two characters that made the least sense post-crisis, because they were so steeped in pre-crisis lore, like, because she had been Helena Wayne, and then she was changed into Helena Bertinelli. I want to say that was post-crisis. I mean, I'll get letters from Matt if I'm wrong, but it was done. I think it was done post-crisis. And Power Girl was the same. Like, Power Girl was. That was Superman of Earth 2's cousin, and then they really had no idea what to do with her origin once when they rebooted DC.
But even before the New 52, I mean, I used to call her not Catwoman.
She's a strange character. Every character is someone's favorite character. I'm sure that one. You missed the. Chris, did I tell you the Scott Shaw story about the con? This was on one of our previous episodes, but it's germane to the point. I asked Scott Shaw to do a Booster Gold sketch for me.
Yes, yes.
And Scott Shaw says it was shocked that Booster Gold was my favorite character and actually wanted me to explain it. I was asked today what I would do if someone besmirched Booster Gold the way that that they had thought David Goyer had besmirched She-Hulk, and I said that happens all the time. No, I don't like it, but yes, it happens all the time. It's not a new experience for me that people don't like.
No,
Booster
but
Gold.
I mean, problem. She-Hulk, quite honestly, is a great character. I love She-Hulk. But there's certain characters like the Huntress that I just go, why is this character hanging around? I mean, I like the Cat of Nine, the Whip of Cat of Nine Tails thing that she had going on at one time.
No, I think that was Catwoman.
Was that Catwoman? Okay, well.
Huntress has the cross.
Who used to team with the Sportsmaster when they were villains?
Oh great! Now I have no idea. It wasn't Huntress, and it wasn't Catwoman either. It was the Sportsmaster, and oh no! All right, we got to move on to something else.
Yeah, something that matters.
Did you see Did you see a little old Captain America there? See which one?
No.
The film. Did you make it to see the Winter
Oh,
Soldier film?
yes, of course.
Oh, that's right.
Of
Yeah,
course. I was there opening weekend. It was great.
Oh, I wanted to say thank you for recommending that I give Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a try again.
You know what? I actually have to thank a Twitter follower, and I don't even know who told me. I think I was tweeting about Captain America Winter Soldier, and they said, you know what? You gotta watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Really? That Norse god stuff really threw me off the series, and Captain America brought me back. And I can't believe it. I really didn't think that series had a chance. And then those four last episodes, five left, let's say five last episodes, rocked. Really, the solid TV I've seen in a long time. I'm all in on this.
I went from having no interest in seeing the show again to the last 2 or 3 weeks watching it while it aired, which I basically never do. I watch almost no TV during its airtime. I watch almost everything video on demand because I just do. I don't like that many commercials. Video on demand only has one commercial per break usually. And
I have to say that one little joke at the end felt so comic booky to me. It was yes, finally what we get in the comic books we get on the screen.
It was really fun those last few episodes, and it really they shook up the cast. Bill Paxton's role was really fun going into like that last cycle. I'd still have no desire to go back and see the ones that I miss, and it actually made me appreciate more Jump on Points, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Really could have had a new number one episode with like the Winter Soldier tie-in. If that was a comic book, that would have been a new number one, and it would have been a great entry point for people to try for the first time. I can't believe how I'm really amazed. It's changed my view of Jump on Points and restart and relaunches of books. Actually, I'm now in the camp of yes, relaunch it if you're making a significant difference. Particularly if you're starting a new creative team, but if you're really changing the status quo like Grayson, yes, you should relaunch from one. Because I'm talking to these people and I'm like, Arrow, it was fantastic this season. I'm talking to people who didn't like the first three episodes of season one. And I say, then don't watch season one. Start with season two, episode one. I'm like, well, I can't do that. I can't start on season two. That makes no sense.
See, with Arrow, I actually think the difference between season one and season two are so incredibly huge.
Mm-hmm.
I really find the lighter tone of, and I say lighter tone just because Arrow isn't killing somebody every issue or episode.
I talked to, I think it was Allison from the Hangout I was talking to. She said that she was really put off by the first episode because Oliver Queen killed somebody. And I've got, you probably should skip the whole first season because he killed like 100 people in the first season. That's not an isolated incident. So you really need to jump ahead. You jump ahead to season two when he says, I want to stop killing people. That's when you probably should start.
No, I found that really, I mean, and I really like, in season one, I liked that they were going with the grim and gritty Green Arrow because that's the guy I knew from the Mike Grell run.
Mm-hmm.
And they steal liberally from Grell
the
first season.
Yeah, for sure.
But the second season, he grows a conscience all of a sudden. We're not going to do that anymore. Which was turning me off. But then, and then they add the Bronze Tiger, which, I mean, Suicide Squad. I mean, Suicide Squad. I love Bronze Tiger. So that got me. That got me to hold on a little bit longer in the season. And you know, then they added the Suicide Squad itself. And I mean, it was a good season. I can't wait to see what they're going to do with the Flash series.
Yeah, that teaser for the Flash looked really cool. And have you seen the final, the extended trailer? Yeah, it looks really fun. It looks like, I mean, we got a glimpse of the Reverse Flash in there, Captain Cold.
Quite honestly, 6 months from now, I don't know where I'm going to find all the time to watch every series that I want to see.
I have no idea. I mean, I've always, like, for years, I've been the pretentious, I don't watch network TV. I only watch long arc television on HBO and Showtime. And now it's like, you know, there's like, what, six network comic based shows that I want to watch all of them. Yeah, I've got to be pretentious about something else now. It's a pain in the butt. I can be plenty pretentious about reading independent graphic novels that you haven't heard of. That'll be my new thing. That's already my new thing.
Yeah, but I just hope I can hold back when somebody at work sees Constantine television series and starts the "I've seen every episode" crap.
I
professing to be an expert on Constantine.
I thought it was much funnier than some of the other people on Twitter that I talked to, that there was a I don't like this Constantine, I want Keanu Reeves back movement. because what's always interesting to me is I've been fascinated for a while about the inside the bubble comic book view of things and what I call civilians think of things.
Yes.
And I always use, my wife's always my, one of my focus groups. There's the people that eat lunch with me at work. And then there's my wife, because my wife hears what I talk about.
You're lucky your wife doesn't hit you, because you actually called Godzilla by his proper name.
she kind of made.
I have seen more Godzilla movies than you have, and even I'm not that pretentious.
I think I just like saying Gojira. It's a fun name to say. Next to Felicity Smoke and Sterling Gates, it's one of my favorite names to say. Little tip for you: don't tell Sterling Gates that his name is really fun to say. He was kind of weirded out by that. just trying to be honest. I admire your work, and you got a fun name to say. It sounds like a James Bond fake name. Like one of the Roger Moore checked into the hotel under the name Sterling Gates. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, Sterling Gates doesn't like draw attention to his name. It's not like Scott Shaw with the little explanation. A little extra punctuation. Scott Shaw wants you to say his name with emphasis every time.
Right.
Sterling Gates, it's just his name.
It's just his name. it's just funny to me, like, how people, because I mean, there's tons of people out there who would only have encountered the Constantine film. That's their only exposure. And if they liked it, they liked it. It's in the middle ground for me for comic book related movies. I mean, I probably put it around where I would.
No, they screw up as much as they get right, which up until about 5 years ago is all we really could ask.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we forget the dark days of comic book based movies. Like I was talking to my wife today, and I said, you know, pre Raimi Spider-Man, David Goyer gave us comic book movies. David Goyer was the first creator, the first writer of a screenplay that didn't make them cheesy. Blade was the first time that a comic book based movie was deadly serious and was successful.
And let's as long as we're talking about bad comic book movies and David Goyer in the same sentence, because we got exciting stuff happening on my little blog, The Many Sins of Albert Payun. Check that out. Just just both Captain America and David Goyer are mentioned frequently, and we're working on some really cool stuff over there. So
that was I have said for a while that I'm glad that each of us has kind of had our really super cool podcast moment, like a moment that we would not have each individually had. Like Mo had his conversations with Valiant creators. He's become really tight with Valiant as a company. Brett, I hosted panels. I got to have, like, I had a one-on-one, like an exclusive interview with Scott Snyder at a comic show. Like we've kind of each had these big moments, but I wondered when you were going to have your moment, and I was so happy for you when Albert Payoun responded to your blog about him and thanked you for that. Like, that was just so cool.
Yeah, it was. If he'd only answer my emails now. He's mailing me stuff, but I'm really hoping he answers my emails.
I think it's fantastic.
Really working on my stalker cred.
Oh, that's amazing. But yeah, I was talking about, it was like 2000, like pre-Spider-Man. I said, the biggest comic book movie that came out in 2001 was From Hell, right?
Wow. And now we got Netflix coming out with six series, like, yeah. Boom.
Yeah, and just like Eric Stevenson told us, not one of them is selling any comic books.
No,
none of those projects are transitioning people.
Hell, we get comic properties now that, I mean, I basically have to look up before. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is primed to be the number one movie this summer, I think. Little prediction there. And we have Agent Carter heading to series. Not to mention, we have a Batman show coming to a network television station without Batman.
Oh, man, I'm excited for Gotham. Oh. Yeah, there's like iZombie. I've never read an issue of iZombie. It was great when Agent Carter got announced. Matt was so excited, and then discovered that it's not Sharon Carter, that it's Peggy Carter. It's one of his favorite actresses, plays Sharon Carter in the Winter Soldier film.
Really? I would have never get. Well, I mean, but she, you know what, I guess from everything I'm hearing, there might be a crossover. If they're tying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in at all, I'm sure Peggy Carter will make an appearance.
I think they're dropping
breath. In Captain America 3, they sort of went nowhere to go but there. So he'll be able to see a lot of her.
Yeah, I think they, I think they're dropping breadcrumbs on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because, one of the character they introduced late in the season, the other agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. that was the field op, the joint that was with them, he keeps referencing his grandfather who was a Howling Commando.
Yes. I went to the Captain America, one, and immediately started trying to figure out who it was because I am that kind of geek.
But that's my expectation is that his grandfather will be introduced into the Agent Carter series.
Yeah, and you know what I came up with? Please not Nick Fury, because that would make make that guy Nick Fury Jr.
No. Like they do say what his grandfather's name was. They do say that on S.H.I.E.L.D. somewhere.
Okay.
But yeah.
Like, and how about those gadgets?
Oh, those were
straight
fun.
Out of the freaking comic book, man.
Fun. Oh yeah, there's some great stuff near the end. I honestly like. I was saying they need an ad campaign for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that just says, "We're sorry for the first half of the season. We don't suck anymore." It's night and day.
Do you think they could take any of those actors from where they were and forming them into anything remotely watchable? Because I didn't think it was possible.
I think if you cut a couple of the characters, I think you cut one character.
Would it be the one they cut?
If you haven't watched, you should try it out, starting from the Winter Soldier tie-in episode.
Did they cut him?
I think he'll be back eventually, but he's out of the regular cast.
Okay.
Well, they cut two characters by the end of the season. One of them's a question mark, and one of them I think is out for a while.
And you know what? As much as I like the actor who plays him, the Patton Oswalt stuff I could do without.
I thought it was awesome, but I don't know. We'll see how much he turns up.
Although it does tie in the whole LMD thing, which I was scared they were gonna do with Coulson. Because it was way too easy.
Yeah, and after a misstep there I think they finally resolved the Coulson thing in a way that was interesting. I think they misstepped when they did the because that was the one I gave. Like I had left for a couple episodes, and I watched the Tahiti episode, and I thought it was so dumb that the answer to what happened to Coulson was science stuff. That was all they did, really. Like, we did a bunch of stuff, and he got better. We tried.
I am now going to be – I'm asking you for a prediction for the season finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2. Who are Skye's parents?
Oh, yeah.
We have comic book knowledge between us.
Who is
– I've been trying to figure it out because it obviously has to be with – somebody from the Marvel Universe, somebody we're familiar with.
Yeah.
Based out of China at one time. Maybe, or maybe a Norse god. I don't know, but I couldn't. I have no clue. And usually I have a list of usual suspects.
Do you think it might be the real Mandarin?
That was. I mean, but that's too easy. That's really too easy. That's the obvious choice.
Yeah.
But, and Mandarin calling the monster, they were the monsters. The dripping hand at the end of the episode.
Oh, it could be Finn. It'll be Fin Fang Foom.
It
also depends on how much they want it. I mean, do they want it? It's how far they're going to tie it into the Netflix stuff, too. I mean, you always got to be careful, particularly when the Netflix stuff won't be on, like, won't be accessible to everyone who watches the show, so you got to be careful not too much. But will it tie to Iron Fist? Maybe. But is she from Kun Lun? Awesome. Like, you know, there's a couple of things like that. I don't know if they would go that far though. Like, even though Netflix shows will be in that universe, I don't know if you make that much of a leap.
See, I was actually going with some sort of Agents of Atlas.
Hmm.
Because those characters, the leader of the Agents of Atlas, former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, I want to say Jimmy Yu, but oh, who's the Asian that's in the classic lineup of S.H.I.E.L.D. Is there? So I was, and they made him the new Yellow Claw.
Mm.
Really strange that they kept that title.
But. Yeah, can you keep the? Yeah, I mean, you're not putting the Yellow Claw on network television. That's not happening.
Yeah, well, no, they can call him the Claw though. It's been done before.
Yeah, the Claw, you can do. Yeah, I don't know. It's it probably will be the end of next season before we find that out. How does that time out? I mean, the next season will end right around when Avengers 2 comes out. Is that, or no, is Avengers yeah. another year away? No, that's right. Yeah, May of next year.
And I think we still have a mystery Marvel slot in there.
I don't know if is Ant-Man before then? Or is it? No, Ant-Man's
yeah,
after that.
Ant-Man's after.
No, there won't be one in between.
No.
The Guardians of the Galaxy is not until October. So, the Guardians of the Galaxy and then.
No, Guardians of the Galaxy is August, isn't it?
No, it's later than that. Anyway, but there, yeah.
God, you mean I'm watching teaser trailers for a movie in October? I never do that. I never watch teaser trailers yet. I'm watching them. Oh God, this is going to be a long wait.
It's a tricky question. Send us a tweet at @CoverReporterK or at @Chris_WeTalk with your guesses of who Skye's parents are. I think it'll be a while before we find this one out. And it may even be that they want to tie it into one of the two movies, and really make it a thing.
Because I mean, they've been doing a good job at disguising stuff. I had no idea Mike Peterson in the first season was going to be Deathlok until he was Deathlok.
Oh, and I'll quickly. You are correct. August 1 for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh,
I thought it was later than that.
Yeah,
I must have been
there,
looking at a foreign release or something. August.
And have you seen the teaser images they just released from Big Hero 6?
No, I haven't.
Interesting take. Interesting take. Not anime at all. Surprisingly, I really thought it was. This is Marvel. The first Marvel animated movie. To go to the theaters ever, the first one under Disney's power, and they're really Disneying it up rather than taking making a huge budget anime movie. It doesn't look that way at all. Of course, I can't even recognize any of the characters when I look at the few images that have been released. So
interesting,
really a different take. They've really reimagined it. Interesting, at least.
Yeah, it's really kind of flown under my radar. Like, I'd heard about it, but, kind of forgot it was even in development. Are they actual images, or are they production sketches?
Actual images.
Oh, wow. Not that far along. Interesting. Well,
we don't have, I think it's Christmas next year. It's just over a year out.
Okay. Intriguing. Well, I am up to date on my summer blockbusters. I saw Godzilla. Loved Godzilla. Big explosions. Lots of wrecking stuff. I've decided that I like wrecking stuff in movies. It's cool. It's my thing. San Francisco, which is a city I love, city I'm familiar with, it gets wrecked. So that's good.
You know, a city was the only thing I was really concerned about with Godzilla. Are there enough skyscrapers to give perspective to Godzilla?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you really get a sense of the size of the creature. It's in the trailer, so it's not. So I'm not giving too much away. That there's a shot of where you get Godzilla compared to an aircraft carrier. And that really captures the scale. I dug it. I really enjoyed the film. It's a bit plot light, but it's a freaking Godzilla film. It's not Stanley Kubrick. It's got as much plot as any other Godzilla film.
I was actually surprised how quickly they came out with the sequel announcement.
It just made bucket loads of money that weekend. Like, it was unbelievable how much.
I mean, true, it goes into the, no shit Sherlock section, but to announce this aggressive we're going into production real quick, it'll be out by so-and-so. I thought that was really strange, considering this could have been a huge bomb. Remember the last one.
Indeed, I certainly had the...
I apologize for making you remember the last one. Although I believe my review coming out of that film was... Yeah, I liked it. It was a Godzilla film. He wrecked stuff.
It doesn't age well.
Yes, I apologize for that.
I
saw it on a really big screen. It was okay. And I never really accounted that Godzilla wasn't in the film. Really, I like Massive Destruction, and I forgot to look for Godzilla.
And it's funny because I saw the new Godzilla on Sunday, and I rewatched Gojira, which is actually called Gojira. The original is Gojira. The Americanized version, which they recut.
I want to have a little conversation about this with you.
Which one?
Go ahead, though.
But I rewatched it, and I was surprised by a couple things. One was the most frequent, like one of the complaints I heard about the new Godzilla was that there was so much that happened at night. And I was actually surprised how much more happened during the day in the new version than in the original. Like the original, because it's a man in a rubber suit, was almost entirely at night and often in the rain because he wanted to cover up. It was a guy in a rubber suit. It's like, I was surprised how much was during the day in the new one. So what were you going to say about, you want to talk about early Godzilla?
Yes, your tweet after you watched Gojira was FK FK Raymond Burr. Now, I will concede that the Americanized version is modestly inferior to the original.
It has a charm.
But it's still a good film. Unless you're sexually attracted to Raymond Burr, you owe the man an apology. He did excellent work. It just wasn't.
I would like to formally apologize.
The same as the original.
I'd like to formally apologize to Raymond Burr. The 1954 Godzilla has a charm, for sure. It is not as pure a monster film as Gojira is, but it does have a charm. I can't watch Godzilla now, the original Godzilla, without remembering there's a Pinky in the Brain episode that was parodying Godzilla, and like because Pinky in the Brain was so cleverly done and so well thought out, what would happen periodically through the episode is that it would cut to Raymond Burr standing in front of a blank wall and saying, "Yes, yes, I see," because that's a gag. If you watch the Americanized version, they took the film Gojira and they added a character played by Raymond Burr so there would be an American hero that you could watch. But he can't do anything in the film, really, because the film's already been made. So he can't directly interact with everyone. So they had to add like other supplementary characters, and often he's reacting to things that people didn't say to him in the original cut, of course. So, and often he's just standing in front of a blank wall so that they can have people talk to him.
But, I mean, those sins are relatively minor to the things done to subsequent films. Godzilla Raids Again, they changed Godzilla's name.
Really?
He was referred to as the Fire Monster.
That's amazing.
Because the American producer, they had the rights to the Godzilla name. It had a successful film released over here. But because the producer didn't like Godzilla's name, they kept the roar.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I
started watching, and I made it into the third film on my streaming service before I got to a Mothra film, and I forgot how much I hate Mothra. And that really stalled me out.
Which one stalled you, just out of here?
It was one of the newest ones. Because I watched. Because
that would probably be SOS.
Yeah, it was Tokyo SOS. That was one.
Yeah, that one's slow.
Yeah.
I'm actually interested. I find there's a, you know, certain movies polarize people, and I find Godzilla Final Wars is one of those.
I have seen
violent disagreements over whether it's a good film or a bad or the worst film ever made.
Talk about reboots. Godzilla. Every Godzilla film I've watched so far ignores every film that went before except for the original Godzilla.
See, this this was also I will put my geek knowledge to work for you here, because this took me a long time to actually figure out. There is no continuity between any of the Godzilla films, with the exception of Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2.
Well, the Godzilla, okay, the versus Mechagodzilla's 1 and 2 tie together, and Tokyo SOS is a sequel to Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla, which,
yes,
just to make your brain hurt a bit more, Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla is a different film than Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, which means in another 20 years we can get a Batman against Superman movie. It's the precedent that that set.
yes.
Okay,
but
so
if you just want to watch a classic Godzilla film, start anywhere. You're going to be confused no matter where you go. They will refer to that happen things in other movies, and those movies may not exist.
That's amazing.
I mean, the kind of continuity Toho Hot had, they made War of the Gargantuans a sequel to Frankenstein Conquers the World. And never actually acknowledge that they're sequels to each other. You have two supposed Frankenstein monsters fighting each other, War of the Gargantuans, yet they never go, it's the same guy.
So what you're saying is that I can watch the original Godzilla or Gojira and any other Toho Godzilla, and it will make a smooth double bill.
It'll be as a smooth transition as if you had seen 1, 2, 3, if you had watched them in order. There is no logical sense. If you were going to do the Mothra thing, the rebirth of Mothra films tied together fairly well, but were all filmed at the same time.
There will be no Mothra for me. I freaking hate Mothra.
See, I understand your hatred of Mothra. I share your hatred of Mothra, but I love the peanuts.
Those
two little fairy things.
Fan casting. Mothra is in Godzilla 2. Who plays the little tiny girls that talk for Mothra?
You know what? You're going to probably kill me on this one. This is very unpopular casting. But to cast too close to the original would be a mistake. I'm saying Miley Cyrus and Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus and Hannah Montana.
She's got the experience. I'm keeping the pixie haircut. That girl can sing. I don't care what else is going on in her life. That girl can sing.
That's better than any answer I could come up with. Now I need a remix of Mothra Can't Stop. Mothra Won't Stop. It's my Mothra. I can do what I want to.
And she's got that otherworldly thing going for her.
I love it.
See, a lot of people might have gone with Dakota Fanning, but she's too old and she's gotten a little creepy.
Elle Fanning hasn't gotten creepy yet, so... and my fan casting totally doesn't work because I think Elizabeth Olsen should be one of them. She's already in the film, so that doesn't help.
Because I work in television, I spent the entire season watching Dancing with the Stars with the sound off. It wasn't until the finale last night that I realized one of them was on Full House. That's DJ! Finally, I figured it out.
Oh my god. Brett Moore, gonna say, how did the show go? I don't know. We talked about Dances with the Stars quite a bit. And we did talk about some comics at some point. What do you think of the we finally got a title for Man of Steel 2. Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Where you at?
They're going it. You know what? I'm still reeling from the fact that they've cast a cyborg.
Cyborg's what's messing me up. All the things, all the crazy, all the
I was willing to go with it. Okay, they need a Wonder Woman. I understand. We need a Nightwing. Alrighty, he's part of the Batman universe. There's going to be a group shot, blah, blah, blah. Cyborg.
Have they officially added Nightwing? Or is it just
Robin? Oh. It might have been just rumor. But adding Cyborg makes it a... Okay, this is just going to... If he talks, it's a Justice League movie. It's no longer Batman versus Superman. When you got everybody there, you got everybody there.
It's getting pretty close. And it's an open question right now of... Are they going to roll in the TV shows? I'm inclined to think they won't. Kind of hoping they won't.
I see them doing it.
With Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. going to a second season, now that it's starting to work, I don't know. The big twist the big thing I was afraid of at the end of Arrow second season was. That it would end with him reading a news report about trouble in Metropolis, now to be continued in Man of Steel that came out last year. I don't know, I'm off two minds. I'd like to see Arrow and Flash in the Justice League movie, but I've seen how badly hobbled Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was by needing to wait until the Winter Soldier came out to make any damn sense. So much of that show seems like filler now in hindsight, because it really feels like they're finally telling the story they set out to do.
Yeah, they were definitely in a holding pattern there.
Yeah, there was only so much they could really set up, knowing that.
I think of Arrow and the Flash as CW shows. They've always done their own thing. I love when shows I like are on CW because they never get canceled, no matter how low they are rated.
Very different expectations of success there, that's for sure. Arrow is seen as a huge success for CW and doesn't have, it has about, 2/3 of the audience that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was considered struggling, was getting. Just different expectations they've got the right demographic. They've got the demographic CW wants. So, whereas, NBC needs bums and seats. They need the mass audience. CW needs, they want their specific demographic to be watching it, and that demographic does.
No, I think because of the demographic differences that they'll realize, at least I hope they realize they have a good thing going over at the CW. They'll leave that alone and not move it over to the movies. What Marvel has done is created it from the beginning, which is my prediction why by the time we get to the Justice League, no one's going to care. This hasn't been constructed from the ground up. It's been... It's just been stuff mashed together to see if it fits.
Yeah, it's interesting. They certainly are talking now about there was an interview with there was a podcast that did David Goyer on as a guest, where he said some stuff that has kind of blown into a big kerfuffle. I'm not going to talk about that part. Because I think that you actually should listen to the podcast instead of reading a poorly transcribed version. He is talking about the challenges of making the Batman Superman movie and planning toward Justice League, and that it is actually very complicated. It's much like he is talking about, when he's in the interview, he's talking about how when they did the Batman Begins series, they were self-contained three movies with a clear kind of storyline that they were telling, and they didn't have to tie to anything. And just the level of complexity he was talking about when they're approaching Batman, Superman, and Justice League, it really does sound like they're going to be spreading out from this. Rather than building toward an Avengers movie, I think they're going to be going to Justice League and then branching out the opposite direction, where we'll start getting the solo films after Justice League.
But speaking from comic books, this it doesn't work that way. You start small and build in the pyramid shape, and Marvel knew this, and that's what they did.
But the reality is that this has only ever worked in film once. So Like, it's not.
It's the only time. These are the only two times it's ever been attempted.
No, and actually, no, it has been done twice. The other one was X-Men, which used exactly this model. They started with X-Men, and then they added the Wolverine movies, and will eventually add a Deadpool movie. So that is an example of doing it the opposite direction. Start.
I actually, although there are individual entries in that series I enjoy, I don't consider it a successful series. It makes money, but I guess that's we differ on that one. So
I love all five of them, and they also made Origins. I love all five of them and the 8 minutes of Origins that I was watching.
Really? You're including the Brett Ratner one, man?
I am. It is an imperfect film for sure. It is clunky.
Wow.
It has its moments. And it had all of that movie gets forgiven for me because it has Ellen Page as a Shadowcat. That's all I need. Like, that's I can forgive a whole lot of
that. There's enough going on in that movie that didn't work that I'd rather watch marathon screenings of Origins than to ever go back to that thing.
Well,
I bet the entire movie that you can't do that. That's Juggernaut. You're killing that character.
I have absolutely no preciousness about that stuff, though. Like, I have zero, you can't do, like, don't make him look like this, and that's not from the comics. I have absolutely none of that.
Well, I'm not being precious about Juggernaut. He just looks stupid. I didn't care that it was different.
if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, as soon as you can, see the Yadorowski's Dune documentary. It is unbelievable. It's a Mexican filmmaker who was trying to do an adaptation of Dune in the 1970s, and he worked with Mobius and H.R. Giger on it.
He's Spanish.
Is he Spanish?
Yeah.
Oh, that is Mexican.
I'm a fan of Yadorowski. I enjoy his work. He's from Spain, lives in Spain now. So
okay. Was his first film made in Mexico? Maybe
his films are made.
That's
where they send him.
That's where I got mixed up. Sorry. I had just seen a whole documentary about Vans, so my brain was a bit fried.
Oh God! Now that I say this, I hope it's right. I haven't.
That's awesome. Anyway, it probably is. So, but he's got this bit in it where he's talking about adapting things because his version of Dune was like as different as David Lynch's was. Yadorowski's version would have been even further away from the book. And he's got this bit where he's basically asked, like, why weren't you doing a faithful adaptation? And he says, what's the point of adapting it if you're just going to tell exactly the same story? You have to change it. You have to make it its own thing or it's not worth doing. And and that's really, like, I think I had already thought that way, and then for him to put it that way, it really did, like, it's why Watchmen is an imperfect film, because it's too close.
It
doesn't have enough.
I feel the same thing about Sin City.
Interesting.
Because I left the film going, that rocked, but it rocked before I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had this experience. Why? I should feel elated that I'd seen something I'd never seen before.
Well, when I saw Watchmen in the theater, like, I love the aesthetic of it. I am a Zack Snyder fan. Yes, we exist, and no, we're not horrible people. But I was watching it, and I got to a point where, like, well, you know, it's a 3-hour long film, so I'm watching it. And I'm like, I have to go pee. And I'm like, okay, well, I know if I go here. What's going to happen is he's going to have a conversation with this girl. Then they're going to sort of try to have sex. It's not going to work out and it'll be awkward. And then he'll go down to his lab. So I can just go now. So I went, I came back and my wife's like, they almost had sex. Like, yeah, I know. It's page 40. It's page 12 of issue 6 of Watchmen. Like, that's all I do. I knew exactly what I was missing. It was just beat for beat.
Why didn't you wait till the Osmosium stuff, though? There's some boring stuff in there. That's a great scene.
I knew I would also see it again at some point. I mean, the director's cut actually I think is stronger, even though it's still, you know, it still is so loyal and actually is more because it, you know, includes more. It's just, I think it's a better I think it's a tighter a stronger adaptation. It's another half hour longer, so it's not tighter.
I haven't found it yet. I do want to watch the Watchmen one that has the pirate the ultimate cut. I don't think it'll work.
It doesn't quite. It almost works. It doesn't quite. I've seen it once. I don't really have a desire to see it again. I borrowed it from someone, so I have seen it. But I have the director's cut.
I have the director's cut, and I have all the supplemental DVDs I've ever cut, but that one. But
yeah, well, and it takes most of the stuff from Under the Hood, plus most of the stuff from Black Freighter, and incorporates it in. And there's extra scenes with the newsman, with the news vendor, Bernie, because both of those characters are named Bernie, the boy who's reading the comic and the news vendor. I like seeing those extra scenes because I happen to have met the actor who plays the news vendor, Bernie. So that's a neat tie for me that I
the kid Bernie or the old man?
The old man. He did a show at the theater I worked at. I talked to him for a few minutes one night about his experience working on Watchmen, which was cool. He had a blast working on the film and loved working with Zack Snyder, and said that when he was on set, there were literally stacks of the graphic novel. Everyone who worked on the movie went away with one of the graphic novels.
That would have been nice. I can't believe I'm already due. I have bought that sucker so many times. I think DC actually weakens the bindings on Watchmen trade paperbacks. They've made it the perfect thickness that it falls apart after 5 readings. And since I read it every year.
Wow. Do you read the text pieces every time?
Every time.
Really?
I've read, just as an experiment, I've read it without.
Yeah.
And I have to say it's a different experience. I'm not saying an inferior experience because I knew the story.
Yeah.
I've also gone through it once right after and read all the text pieces without reading the comic book bits.
Oh, interesting. I saw this I saw this really cool experiment with it. Where this guy had taken all the pages out. He scanned the pages and he deleted everything for the Black Freighter that wasn't the Black Freighter. So you'd have like a whole white page with just one panel and one word balloon. And he tried to, what it was an experiment was, it's about 40 pages long and it's only the Black Freighter stuff. And how does that story flow if you only looked at those panels? So it's kind of a neat thing. It is a bit disjointed because Black Freighter is tying thematically to other stuff that's going on in the story.
Do you find it at all frustrating reading The Watchmen? Because I find the amount it changes stuff, from this to this to this to this. Like every time I get to a Black Freighter bit, we're going back to the pirates.
It is one. I'll be honest. The last time I read it, I think I read about half of the text pieces. I think I read all the ones except for the Under the Hood ones. I think I maybe skimmed them just to remind myself how the different characters tie together. I skipped Black Freighter. Like I actually just bypassed all of the Black Freighter sections.
I just find that it seems to be almost an exercise in making myself mad because I get mad when I have to switch... But I had Rorschach. Now I'm on a freaking boat, and now I have to read like 10 pages of text, and then by the end of the text or the pirate stuff, I'm like, oh god, we're back to the comic book story, and I have to deal with Osmarion again. I hate that guy.
I, it's always interesting to me when you take these really classic works and then would they actually work today? Like, what would people think if Watchmen number one came out right now? Would it, like...
Oh, as a monthly, people could not deal with...
I did have a laugh like when they announced Zero Year and it was going to be 14 parts. And, like, people lost their mind that they were going to spend, it'd be over a year reading one story. One story? Oh my God, one story will take over a year for it all to come out.
Then you get three issues in and you get a text issue and oh man, that would piss people off today.
It's half text.
Oh, that would be like trying to redo a service today.
you read it's got, yeah, Zero Year number one has 18 pages of is 20 pages of story, and then it has 4 pages of just nonstop text. It's Alfred's journal from Zero Year.
And see, I was defending text there, and I can't defend that. That sounds boring.
But I was, and what's one of the things that's made me think about it is that Forever Evil number 7 finally came out today. I will admit, finally, it was 2 months late, so you know it deserves a bit of hassle for that. And this storyline started with the beginning of Trinity War, which was July of last year. So July of last year to May of this year, that's 11 months, and. That's a long time for a story, but it's 1 month less than Secret Wars. It's 1 month less than Crisis on Infinite Earth. How would people handle a 12-issue monthly crossover event now?
Oh, I don't know. But I mean, I have to admit, I'm impatient now. I've been hardly waiting for Forever Evil to end so I can read number one.
See, you were waiting to read the whole thing as one piece.
I do story arcs.
I mainly do too. I mean, some things I can't wait for. But I actually have only read about half of. I only read the first two arcs of Zero Year because I've been waiting to read them as arcs. They broke them up a little bit, but I haven't read the last like I think 4 issues now.
No, I usually wait till they're out, and sometimes if they're not particularly interesting events, Comicology sales are awesome.
That's right. Yeah, and it's interesting that you know it is a bit of the of where the balance is because DC is now playing with weekly titles. They'll have 3 weekly titles by the end of the year. Batman Eternal. Future's End, which is one of my favorite books right now, and World's End. So by October, we'll have 3 weekly books. And Marvel's been doing double shipping for years. If you look, Ellie, there's some folks losing their mind about DC doing weekly books because apparently there's a gun to their head and they're forced to buy them. It's a lot, but you know, 15, 20 years ago, I was buying 4 Supermans a month that were tying in as one story. So a weekly actually I like the pace of a weekly. If you buy both of Jonathan Hickman's Avengers books, you're buying weekly. Ta-da. If you buy both of Bendis's X-Men books, you're buying weekly. Ta-da.
The weekly example throwing out, I actually are thinking the wrong press, the wrong way for DC to go. I think their successful model for the digital 11 page weekly for a price point should be the way they're doing it. I like weekly. I just don't need that much story.
I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing to play with. I mean, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I mean, certainly, 52 is a remarkable work. Countdown is not a remarkable work, and Trinity was not a remarkable work.
There is a lot of redeeming things within the Countdown to 52. Was that what you were referring to? Countdown 52?
Countdown to Final Crisis is the...
Anything to do with Final Crisis, as far as I'm concerned, was a misstep. So, no, because we had Countdown to 52. We had the OMAX series. We had the Rand Theragun War.
Yeah, and that was Countdown to... That
my favorite book that had Blue Devil in it.
Yeah.
I missed the original Blue Devil.
Yeah, because those books all led into Infinite Crisis, and then 52 came out of Infinite Crisis.
Mm.
Because it was Infinite Crisis, and then 1 year later was where all the issues picked up after that, and 52 was the fill of 1 year.
And I have to say, I'm a little frustrated that the Comicology sale did put World War III, the Aftermath issues,
mm-hmm.
on sale, but forgot about the Four Horsemen.
I don't know if I've even read the Four Horsemen.
No, neither have I. That's why I wanted it on sale.
I haven't found the trade yet of World War III, because I did reread 52 when I got all the trades last year. I like what they're playing with, and I don't think, like, cost wise, I did the math on it. Future's End, $3 an issue will cost $156. If you got Superior Spider-Man and Spider-Man Superior Team Up, or whatever they call that one. Superior Spider-Man Team Up or Superior Team Up. Which were tightly tied together in storyline. If you got those two books for the past year, $152.
Now you're making me look at what I spend on comic books, you bastard.
But I think time wise is an interesting thing for you to put up and bring up as as someone that, like, as you said, that you read more arcs, it is an interesting pace for that, because it's really what I like about weekly, is that the Wednesday fix, it's like watching a TV show. It's appointment TV. A monthly book, I can pile up two or three before I read it, it's been a long time since I like the pace of a monthly book. I prefer to read two or three at least at a time, and get a real bite to it. I dig the weekly though, because on Wednesday, the same reason I like the digital first stuff is that I like that fix faster. And when people are complaining about events taking too long, clearly they want this stuff faster. So that DC's giving them to them shouldn't be something to complaining about, but I don't know, it's the freaking internet. They're going to complain about everything.
Now, on a totally different topic, have you seen Grant Morrison's Multiversity cover? I mean, I was blown away. Gorgeous. This is a book we've been waiting for a long time. And we got Captain freaking Garrett on the cover.
I couldn't believe Captain Garrett was on it. That was really cool.
I mean, it's a different Captain Garrett than we've ever seen before, but...
And it's different.
Let's face it, it's a surprise.
Yeah, that one really surprised me. I mean, everyone else I was expecting, like, I knew was coming. I knew they're doing a Charlton Earth. I knew that was coming. I knew they're doing something with the Shazam family, the Fossiter. But yeah, the Captain Carrot was an interesting one. I am really looking forward to it. I mean, I've always said that I like when Grant Morrison has his own playground. And 5 years ago, Multiversity was supposed to be the basis of the DC universe. I have no idea whether that's still a case or whether it's going to be an isolated thing. I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out it's an isolated thing at this point.
I actually believe DC will claim it is the DC universe, and Grant Morrison will do whatever the hell he wants.
I will say yes to the second thing for sure. Because even in shared universes, he has done that. It's one of the reasons why Countdown to Final Crisis doesn't work, is because Grant Morrison was going to do whatever he was going to do, and you aren't going to tell him threads that you were going to hand him. infamously, Grant Morrison never read Death of the New Gods, which is supposedly a story that led into Final Crisis. I think that it will be it'll be like Superman Birthright. Multiversity will be its own thing until it actually comes out, and if it's popular, then it will be the basis of the multiverse. Just like when Birthright was done, Birthright was an isolated story that was not in continuity. It was popular, then they made it the continuity.
No, what I hope happens actually is similar, but I hope it keeps Grant Morrison's own thing. DC owns all the rights. They do an after Watchmen thing, create their own lines. I get a Captain Carrot title and a Shazam family title. I don't care whether it ties into anything or not.
Well, I think it'll be an interesting book no matter what. I am looking forward to it. So,
have you actually tried to explain the Guardians of the Galaxy to a non-comic reader yet?
I'll be honest. I need it explained to me.
Well, no. I mean,
it's. I've read it. I read the number one. I read the Infinite Comics, so I have a basic idea. But it's funny.
Giving people the broad strokes, like, because I've had to do it. Everybody knows I'm the Marvel movie guy around here. And a couple times, so I've heard of the Avengers, I've heard of Captain America. Their next big movie is Guardians of the Galaxy. What the hell is this? And I have to go, it's a really cool space team with a raccoon and a tree. Really? They do have a raccoon and a tree on the team. And they're nowhere near as stupid as it sounds. Really, that is the only pitch I can give this movie. I know it's cool, but...
My tongue-in-cheek comment when the first teaser trailer came out was, I'm starting to think that Vance Astro isn't even in this movie. Because, honestly, I have almost no exposure to this version of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm a 40-year-old guy, so my Guardians of the Galaxy was the one Jim Valentino did, which has some, like, Yondo was in that one, but that, I think that's the only duplicated character, because that was one with Starhawk, Vance Astro, Yondu was in it, like I said, the only continuing one, and it was a cool, like, it was a continuity reflective book. Because takes place in the distant future, kind of a Legion of Superheroes type story, and they were going in search of artifacts from the heroic age. So they found Wolverine's skeleton, they found Captain America's shield, they teamed up with Silver Surfer, who was still alive.
What was it in his own title then?
It was called Guardians of the Galaxy. It started in 1990.
I wonder if my Marvel Unlimited app is.
I think it has some of them, because the first six or eight or
five, sounds like it rocks. Actually,
it was it was Jim Valentino doing it, and right, because it was the book he left to go to go found Image. It was sold really well at the time.
Considering that the Guardians of the Galaxy have had some themes,
mm-hmm.
It's an odd choice for a movie. There's no easy pitch to give to people. And the annihilation, which is what I call the team that is being represented, is the annihilation Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a good read, but it isn't a great read. It's summer fun at the best. You don't get attached to Groot or any of them. Really. I read it going, oh, look, there's a space knight. I miss Rom.
Funny. I mean, yeah, some people...
It's not particularly memorable.
Some people just absolutely love that run, and and some people are really precious about that run and any kind of changes to it. And it was funny to see people react to the new version of Guardians of the Galaxy, because they felt it was trampling on the Abnett Lanning run. And the Abnett Lanning run has no presence for me because I'm familiar with the Valentino run. And I was talking to our pal Longbox Graveyard, Paul, who actually the version I know is the one that trampled on the version he knew from the 1970s. So,
no, when they announced this movie, I fully thought they'd go with that version of the team. I never even considered another version of the team. I thought they were going to have Charlie 27, the world's stupidest character, from Jupiter, and Fat and Scout, because Jupiter has like more gravity or something. Diamond Head guy, who, let's face it, sucks.
Yeah, he was.
And
he was
the really cool Archer dude that I can't wait to see.
Yondu, yeah.
Because he has a cameo in the movie, supposedly.
Yeah. Well, Yondu is in every version of Guardians of the Galaxy. He's the only character that is in every version. All of those characters did show up, were part of the 90s version. They expanded the team, and added a lot new. They added a woman. You know, crazy thought to actually have a team with a woman or two on it. Because you look at that original version, three dudes wandering around the universe. Like it's like Red Dwarf. Like it's an odd book. Well, I think it's time to wrap this show up without ever having gotten to our topic.
No. That's one thing. There's always lots of comic book talk today.
Good. I like that we never opened the news. We never did any reviews.
So the end credits are brought to you by Comicosity, the best site on the net for
news, reviews, previews, some fantastic commentary, and absolutely nothing about movies. So a lot of what we talked about here tonight will not be on Comicosity.com. Go there for everything that wasn't on this week's episode. and this show is not brought to you by NerdBlock, even though we both love our NerdBlocks. Chris and I have subscriptions to NerdBlock.
HorrorBlock!
Oh, I almost switched. I came so close to switching. I can't afford to do both.
I'm doing both for the first month and making a decision.
And once I opened this month's NerdBlock, I'm glad I didn't change because there was such cool stuff in it.
Did you get the Darth Vader?
The stuffed animal? No,
If you say Chewie, I'm going to have to hit you next time I see you, man. I want a Chewie so bad.
You have to check my Twitter. Check my @CupboardK. This month's NerdBlock came with a Star Wars plush. If you haven't gotten your NerdBlock, well, tough. By the time this episode goes up, you will have gotten it. So. It came with Star Wars Plus. So, Chris, you say you got Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
I got Yoda. But the odd design of this Yoda looks to me like Mel Brooks as Joker.
It does not look
like Yoda.
He totally does. I've seen it. That was my second choice after Chewie. I shouldn't get overly familiar with Chewbacca. I'm sorry.
But I
wanted Yoda second just because it's such an odd. I want to call it a sculpt. Big eyes.
It's such a weird. Like because we've got a tradition that I like surprise. So my wife opens it up and she sorts the items to give me like the least, the one she thinks I'll be least interested in, and then I get like the coolest thing in the box last. So she hands me this thing. I look at it. And I'm like, oh, it's a Star Wars thing. And then I'm like, is that Mel Brooks? Is this a yogurt action, yogurt plushie? I even looked at the tag to make sure it wasn't Spaceballs. It looks that much like Mel Brooks.
See, you don't have to have your wife sort it. You can just use a tea towel like I do to cover the box
around. I did that the first month. Then she wanted to do it the other way. So.
I have trained my nephew to open up his nerd blog junior I buy him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Do the same way now.
That's
so
awesome. My wife thinks it's funny because it's basically like Christmas at once a month. I get this box of just random junk. But it came with a comic book. Like this month came with a comic book.
Uh-huh. And a mighty cool comic book.
A very cool
one, guy. One I've been holding off buying for myself anyway, and it has a cool cover that I can next con get a commission on.
I dig it. Yeah, I also had not purchased this one, so this is it's a good deal.
You think Riley Rasimo would draw me a Spider-Man?
I should have commissioned Riley at the last show because I know he was doing stuff. I mean, I still haven't gotten a Riley commission. I got a little sketch from Fiona. That's the second time I've gotten a sketch from her. But I didn't get anything from Riley. I've gotten a commission from Scott Kowalczyk. I collect Booster Gold sketches, of course, and Jawas from Star Wars. So I have a Fiona Staples Jawa sketch. And I think that's what I want Riley to do. I think I want him to do a Jawa. I think he would do a wicked Jawa.
For me personally, Riley, this has been my chocolate peanut butter thing for a long time. I want Riley to draw something noir.
Oh, interesting.
He's a horror guy. But for some reason, I think his style would.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It's not would really highlight something, you know, dark and mysterious. I'd love to see that. And it hasn't happened yet. So maybe if I can find some sort of noir-y Spider-Man thing, I can get my Spider-Man cover drawn.
All right, well, let's wrap this bad boy up. Thank you so much for joining us. Visit us, wetalkpodcast.com, and email, what's our generic email again? It's,
I think it's, oh. I was going to say wetalkpodcast.
Is it comics?
I think it's wetalkcomics at.
I don't know what our email is. Follow us on Twitter at CubReporterK and at Chris_WeTalk.
We will tell you that other one in a second.
Check with us there. We'll tell you what the email address is if you follow us on Twitter. We're part of the podcast network of some sort, which Mo always remembers to do, and I never do. And again, visit comicosity.com for all the news that fits. And if Chris has found the email address yet.
No.
So close to, even without the email address, let's call this one OUT.
It's, yes, even, can't believe we forgot that.